Continuing Helen Wright's book, If Mary Baker Eddy's Manual Were Obeyed.
Now let her pass on to her last experience, and the sooner the better. When will we not learn in any other way this is God's order of teaching us? His rod alone will do it. God's plan is spiritual organization. Quote, it is only a question of time until God shall reveal His rod and show the plan of battle, unquote. It is His rod that has brought the material organization to its knees and to the chilling realization that Christian Science today is considered a mere cult by the press. 1934 Illegal Copyright Renewal. When the field was sufficiently aroused to begin a questioning campaign, a tremendous extravaganza was quickly launched to divert attention. One such occasion was in 1934, when the 1906 copyright on science and health was expiring. Mrs. Eddy had made no provision for its renewal, as she wanted Science and Health, the Comforter, promised by Jesus, to pass into the public domain as soon as it had, quote, reached its culmination of scientific statement, unquote, which it did in 1910. She therefore did not apply for either a copyright or a registration of the changes to Science and Health. Hence, the 1910 edition was never under copyright. But those in the seat of great authority, unquote, had succeeded in keeping the field from this knowledge. In 1934, as adroit Mother Church spokesmen found their way in and out of the Washington, D.C. Copyright Office in their successful endeavor to obtain an illegal renewal of the 1906 copyright on science and health, the building of a grand and expensive Christian Science publishing house was launched, and all attention was diverted to and riveted on it. Recall, this was in the dark days of the Great Financial Depression. It is interesting to note how the adverse influence of animal magnetism worked on the board members to cause them to betray Mary Baker Eddy, their professed leader, for whom they publicly alleged great love. In 1934, the United States copyright law permitted the author of a book to renew a copyright, or if the author had passed on, the executor of the author's estate or a son or daughter could renew. In 1934, Mrs. Eddy's son George and her adopted son Ebenezer Foster Eddy had both passed on, and Mr. Farnald was no longer the executor, since he had closed his administration of Mrs. Eddy's estate 20 years earlier. Until Mrs. Eddy's adopted traitorous son Ebenezer Foster Eddy passed on, the board had used him to renew all copyrights as they expired. In 1934, the directors had to resort to fraudulent, illegal means to renew the copyright on the 1906 Science and Health. Since an executor could not renew a copyright after his duties as administrator of the estate had been completed and closed, Mr. Farnald had closed his administration of Mrs. Eddy's estate in March of 1914. Nevertheless, in 1934, Mr. Farnall secured for the directors an illegal renewal of the copyright by falsely stating to the Washington, D.C. Copyright Office officials that he was the executor of Mrs. Eddy's estate. Remember Mrs. Eddy's signed statement, "It took a combination of sinners that was fast to harm me." Years later, 1971 approached. The copyright on Science and Health was once again expiring. The stratagem was repeated. While Mother Church representatives urged a few sympathetic congressmen in Washington, D.C. to pass special legislation to again extend the copyright on Science and Health, it is probably no coincidence that the attention of the Christian Science field was once more drawn to and completely absorbed in the building up of matter. This time, a skyscraper called the Christian Science Center. And again in 1984, faced with the possibility of losing their copyright, they invited the Christian Science field to attend an elaborate and extravagant satellite worldwide video conference, which appeared to many to be not much more than a Madison Avenue attempt to improve the image of the board of directors and other executives, and to tell the faithful what really nice people we, the directors, are. The hierarchy is today telling people who have dropped their membership and have subsequently had problems that if they will come back, rejoin the church, their problems will all disappear. This is not Christian Science. It savors of voodooism, and its use of propitiatory rites to put people into a trance as a means of communicating with animistic deities. Ecclesiasticism's determination to hold spirit in the grasp of matter and rule through mortal willpower, in total disobedience to the Church Manual's estoppels, shows its poverty, its nakedness, its complete misunderstanding of the science of being. Mrs. Eddy warned against this way of trying to establish Christ's church by material organization. She saw it was building on sand. Everything Mrs. Eddy taught is the complete opposite of the religiosity the Boston hierarchy now feels duty-bound to implement. Therefore, when they find a church or society explicitly obeying the manual in a way that threatens their authority, they regard it as a brush fire that must be quickly extinguished, since not the manual and Mrs. Eddy's instructions, but we, the board, are the, quote, tender guardians of the field's footsteps heavenward, unquote. In the story of The Emperor's New Clothes, the emperor is convinced he is clothed in his regal finery, and that these entitle him to his office of pomp and splendor. As he rides through town, he is convinced he has a crown and ermine on. But though he believes he is royally clothed, in truth, he is as naked as a jaybird. He has none of those things which give him the kind of kingly status he thinks he's got. He is naked, the same as all the rest, who think they are mortals born of the flesh. He has none of the spiritual qualities that really give the only power obtainable. It is significant that not the people in general, but a little child, first saw through the emperor's material dream and cried out, "Look, the emperor has no clothes." She saw he was devoid of and blind to the things, the qualities, that give true power. The Boston hierarchy is convinced they are enrobed with all power, but the only power anyone really has is in the power to be obedient to spiritual law. If the hierarchy is not obedient to spiritual law, not obedient to the estoppels in the manual, it has no clothes. It is naked. Its determination to hold spirit in the grasp of matter and rule through mortal willpower, in total disobedience to the Church Manual's estoppels, shows its poverty, its complete misunderstanding of the science of being. But sooner or later, the baptism of repentance comes to everyone. This is why, although you loathe the error, you never condemn persons who are under animal magnetism's influence. You continue to point out the error, uncover it, and so help the erring one see the light. But we never just stick our head in the sand and refuse to face error. In an early writing, Mrs. Eddy speaks of the stupid ostrich in connection with the notion that one is hiding iniquity by asserting its nothingness. The cross and the crown seal in the circle with the four gospel commands which appear on the cover of Mrs. Eddy's books was her own legal trademark. Trademarks don't expire as copyrights do. They go on ad infinitum. At the time of the congressional hearing on this copyright issue in 1971, the subcommittee that took the testimony from the church witnesses was clearly apprised of what constituted legal trademarks on the textbook. This is why the House of Representatives Judiciary asked the question, quote, "Why do you seek continued copyright protection if your trademark will guarantee that the buyer receives the legitimate version?" Unquote. The churchmen testifying for the church had indicated they needed this protection in order to keep the teachings of the textbook pure. The congressional subcommittee pointed out that the textbook could not have the cross and crown insignia on the cover if it was not the exact text Mrs. Eddy wrote. The congressional subcommittee couldn't understand why the board of directors was going to such great clandestine effort and expense to get continued copyright extensions when the cross and crown emblem on the cover was a registered trademark. They felt this was all the church really needed to guarantee authenticity of her writings. Attorneys also pointed out that the restoration of her picture and signature would provide additional copyright protection. Retaining control, the aim. The above stated facts and the Congressional Subcommittee's findings have led thinking Christian Scientists to the conclusion that not copyright privileges, but control of the entire Christian Science movement was the aim and goal of the directors. Copyright ownership would give them a pretext for having authors submit their manuscripts for approval and for assurance of permission to publish. This is an arrogant assumption of superiority to the law. Not the copyright law as it stands, but the directors assuming the power to judge and punish, the power to determine what shall be published on the meaning of Mrs. Eddy's teaching. Mrs. Eddy wrote, "Let the word have free course and be glorified. Christian Science is not copyrighted. A student can write voluminous works on science without trespassing if he writes honestly, and he cannot dishonestly compose Christian Science. But the glorification and free course of the word is muzzled and fettered as long as Mrs. Eddy's writings are imprisoned by legal copyright, which carries criminal sanctions if, in the opinion of the Christian Science Board of Directors, their copyright ownership has been infringed." The proof that these many instances of flagrant disobedience to the manual has done immeasurable harm lies in the reversal of the great prosperity our movement formerly enjoyed. A sword hangs by a thread over the head of those who would struggle to embellish and elaborate the infinite theme of the Christ Science. It hangs over the head of those whose utterances are essential to the propagation of the truth Mrs. Eddy's writings hold. The dead hand of censorship, along with the threat of fines and imprisonment, which breaching of legal copyright law imposes, have a way of deterring those successive utterances of reformers that are essential to truth's propagation. The horror of religious persecution is no longer the dungeon, the rack, and the stake, but the reign of fear. The rule of error remains with us to the extent that church and state can unite and via copyright laws can enact through the civil arm of government penalties of fines and imprisonment as punishment for obeying the highest dictates of one's conscience. But truth crushed to earth shall rise again. It cannot be stereotyped. It unfolds forever. Understanders must elaborate, not be muzzled. Because Mrs. Eddy knew the word must have free course and be glorified, and because she knew the education of the future would be instruction in spiritual science, she wrote, "Christian Science is not copyrighted. A student can write voluminous works on science without trespassing if he writes honestly." But as Mrs. Eddy knew, ecclesiastical tyranny, in order to perpetuate itself, seeks to freeze, at a great leader's passing, all growth and progress. It must therefore muzzle the mouth lisping God's praise, and must choke off elaboration, embellishment, and more detailed treatment of the message God sends mankind through an enlightened consciousness. In her preface to Science and Health, she explicitly states she has, quote, "bluntly and honestly given the text of truth, but has made no effort to embellish, elaborate, or treat in full detail so infinite a theme. Future ages must declare what the pioneer has accomplished, unquote. Books explaining Mary Baker Eddy's great accomplishment and the science of God revealed through her, written by many authors since her departure in 1910, constitute a part of the embellishment, elaboration, and detailed treatment which Mrs. Eddy knew must follow in the development of the infinite theme of the Christ science she discovered and founded in human consciousness. To make certain this point was understood, she further explained, quote, "We err in thinking the object of vital Christianity is only the bequeathing of itself to the coming centuries. The successive utterances of reformers are essential to its propagation. The magnitude of its meaning forbids headlong haste, i.e., would forbid the self-will of ecclesiastical authorities to ban books that embellish and elaborate. The infinite theme of the Christ science revealed to Mrs. Eddy, while the consciousness which is most imbued struggles to articulate itself, struggles to articulate the elaboration and embellishment of the infinitely unfolding, unstereotyped truth," unquote. It is essential to progress that we have these successive utterances without authoritarian ecclesiastical hindering and ostracizing of the unfolding truth, and without what amounts to officialdom's banning of helpful books that pour the healing balm of truth and love into humanity's wounds, animating and stimulating progress heavenward. Progress is thwarted when the rights of conscience are abrogated and the channels of God choked. Unlawful authorizing of literature. Since 1916, many books have been produced explaining the deeper meaning of the second coming of the Christ, which Mrs. Eddy's writings brought. Many of these books help the reader to gain a true picture of our leader's life and the Christ element in her character that made her equal to her God-ordained mission. But these books have not enjoyed a wide readership. Why? Because among the other attempts by the Board of Directors in Boston to restrict the Christian Science movement under authoritarian control was the illegitimate and deadly imposition of the label Authorized Literature on all of Mrs. Eddy's works. This was done in 1916, 6 years after she left this world. The label Authorized Literature sounded the death knell to any advance in the Christian Science movement. It produced a sharp cleavage of fundamental interests, separating church scientists and independent Christian scientists from each other. This cleavage greatly deprived the church scientists, who were falsely led to believe it was disloyal to read anything not authorized by the Board of Directors in Boston. It kept them locked into the stage of growth the field had reached in 1916. It separated them from a deep, as well as higher, more spiritual understanding of Mrs. Eddy's writings, which progressive scientists were discovering in her textbook and other writings, and which these independent, progressive Christian scientists were explaining in their publications. In 1891, some misguided students tried to set up an association for distributing selected Christian Science literature, which in effect would have censored the books that may be read. Mrs. Eddy vigorously squelched such an attempt to authorize the literature and immediately put a stop to it. She called the attempt, quote, "wicked, offensive, prescriptive, a curse, tyrannical, obnoxious," unquote, as can be verified by her June 24th letter to Mr. William G. Nixon, her publisher, in which she categorically stated that God had shown her the total evil of such a scheme. She therefore castigated it in the just-mentioned terms, saying, "I will rip up all my business relations and take them into my hands before this most wicked, prescriptive, uncharitable measure shall be carried. I never read the May Journal, and never knew until now the curse in this platform. this obnoxious feature shall be stopped by his servant, Mary Baker Eddy, who has given God's word to the world, not to a privileged monopoly to tyrannize over other writers. That Mrs. Eddy deemed this authorizing association a monstrous and outrageous scheme, an outrage alike against decency and dignity, against journalism and society, is indicated by this severe denunciation of it. She voiced this criticism and condemned this attempt at authorizing literature, even though it came at a time when seditious students were busy setting up rival publications, which woefully misrepresented her teaching. Mrs. Eddy saw the overall picture and the great future danger. She detected in this move the beginning of an arbitrary control over students' reading. In addition to the private letter to Mr. Nixon, she also wrote a public, temperate admonition and warning, which appeared in the form of a tip sheet opposite page 135 in the July 1891 Christian Science Journal. The fact that her rebuke and a counsel entered the journal in the form of a tip sheet, because it arrived as the journal was going to press and too late to be incorporated properly, made it easy for the ecclesiastical authorities to remove it when she was no longer here. A tip sheet doesn't have a page number. Mrs. Eddy foresaw that the authorizing of literature made it possible for ecclesiasticism to outlaw any writing which did not particularly uphold its position, however correct the writing or literature might be regarding Christian Science and its leader. In the early 1920s, shortly after the great literature litigation, this tip sheet, containing the wise and timely warning so crucial to the success of the Christian Science movement, was removed from copies of the journal in Christian Science reading rooms throughout the world and from journals obtainable from Boston headquarters. An ecclesiastical hierarchy, in order to maintain itself, must control what its membership reads. A copy of this tip sheet has been obtained from the Library of Congress, and a photocopy of it is shown on following page. Note the contrast between Mrs. Eddy's temperate, official public wording compared to the outrage expressed in her private letter to her publisher, Mr. Nixon. Card. Since my attention has been called to the article in the May Journal, I think it would have been wiser not to have organized the General Association for Dispensing Christian Science Literature. 1. Because I disbelieve in the utility of so widespread an organization. It tends to promote monopolies, class legislation, and unchristian motives for Christian work. 2. I consider my students as capable, individually, of selecting their own reading matter and circulating it as a committee would be which is chosen for this purpose. I shall have nothing further to say on this subject, but hope my students' conclusions will be wisely drawn and tend to promote the welfare of those outside as well as inside this organization. Mary B. G. Eddy. As has already been stated, Mrs. Eddy, with divine wisdom and foresight, saw the great future danger of authorizing literature, and she issued her warning, even though at that very time rival publications were misrepresenting her teaching. Mrs. Eddy knew that what was not of God, infinite good, could not stand. Knowing that Christ is the mind of Christ, she could see Jesus' way from taking the sword, "I came to bring a sword," to the later time at the end of his earthly career when he said, "Put up thy sword." She saw the entire pathway and realized it was the only way in Christian Science. To a student, Mrs. Eddy wrote, "Even though the waves are dark and tumultuous in this heavenward course, as we are reaching the sweet haven home, they will grow calm. It is home at last, and there is no night there and no more sea." Convinced that abiding strictly in divine principle would result in victory, Mrs. Eddy marched bravely on, founding her revelation and discovery of science, which heeds not the pointed bayonet. Textbook not subordinate to church. The imposition of the label Authorized Literature of the First Church of Christ Scientist in Boston, Massachusetts, on all of Mrs. Eddy's published works soon after her passing was a further indication of the director's uneasiness in their usurped power. That surprising addition to her books might have seemed to suggest to some Christian scientists that the Church accepted them as its religious literature, and might possibly, at some future time, adopt some other writings in their stead. The true relation between the textbook and the Church was, of course, just the reverse. There is hardly a reference to the Christian Science Church in the whole of Science and Health. The science of mind healing taught by Mrs. Eddy, personally and through her writings, enabled students to perform the healings which resulted in churches being established. But for the Board of Directors, there was another advantage to introducing the label Authorized Literature, associated at first with the unquestioned authority, namely Mrs. Eddy's own writings. What could be more authoritative literature on Christian Science? However, with the promotion of the expression Authorized Literature, it was soon insinuated into the thought of Christian Scientists everywhere that they should not trust their own spiritual sense and judgment of anything written on Christian Science. This, even though they were taking only Science and Health and other works by Mrs. Eddy, together with the Bible, as their only textbooks for self-instruction in Christian Science, and for teaching and practicing metaphysical healing, as Article 4, Section 1 of the manual requires of applicants for membership in the Mother Church. By such articles as appeared in the Sentinel of April 4, 1942, entitled From the Directors, the field has been thoroughly indoctrinated with the notion that to be on the safe side, Christian Scientists should read nothing on Christian Science unless it is authorized by the five directors in Boston, implying that only the directors are endowed with intelligence or spiritual sense. Remember, it is by wide reading and trying the spirits that the student cultures his own spiritual sense. This outrageous assumption of omniscience and suppression of freedom reached an astonishing height and boldness when the October 1951 journal carried a message from the directors entitled Circulation of Unauthorized Literature, which insinuated that the manual bylaw concerning no incorrect literature, page 43, meant no unauthorized literature, as though anything not authorized by five mortals in Boston was incorrect. Were the waters being tested to see what the field would tolerate? Many instances could be cited where inspired writing and teaching has been effectively banned by this authoritarianism. Under the ecclesiastical policy prevailing since Mrs. Eddy's departure, much writing, however scientifically correct, is branded as incorrect if it has not been sanctioned by the rulers. Let us not forget that when a quarter century earlier students tried to authorize literature, Mrs. Eddy called it wicked, prescriptive, offensive, a curse, obnoxious, and tyrannical. What would she have said of the Board of Directors' assertion in the periodicals that they were the, quote, tender guardians of the field's footsteps heavenward? The authorizing of literature was but one of the calamitous evils hatched in the wake of the director's refusal to obey the manual's requirements that would end the material organization, which Mrs. Eddy saw posed such a grave danger to the cause of Christian Science. She knew that if the Christ idea was ever to be embodied in material organization, the organization would promptly proceed to kill the idea, since the major concern of an organization soon becomes the sustaining of itself. In a church organization, ecclesiastical tyranny muzzles the mouth, lisping God's praise. Mrs. Eddy's letter regarding church. Mrs. Eddy asked that the following part of her letter to a student be inserted in the Christian Science Journal. Quote, "True Christianity began to wane as truth became hid in churches and ritualistic forms, and just as you lay more stress on the formation of church organizations than you do on the work of healing, will your cause decline and eventually be lost. All your churches and preachers will not do as much to win people to the truth as a few good healers. Science and Health is greater than any church. This book, Science and Health, or rather the truth therein, needs no church to proclaim it or bolster it. I condemn the mistaken policy of embalming any truths." The last statement no doubt refers to the fact that church organizations tend to embalm truth, to fix it in a static condition, leaving no opportunity for growth or development. It seems clear that all along, Mrs. Eddy saw Science and Health, not the Christian Science churches, as the Redeemer. She wrote, "I want my students to take every means possible to make Science and Health available to the whole world." When students began church services in Concord, New Hampshire, where Mrs. Eddy resided, she wrote to one of the prominent Concord scientists in part, "I did not want a church so near me in Concord. Now I see. If there were no Sunday service and only healers here, I sincerely believe it would be better for me and the world." Manuel was Manuel of the First Church of Christ Scientists. Although it is most often called Manual of the Mother Church, its actual title is Church Manual of the First Church of Christ Scientists in Boston, Massachusetts. The title on the cover of all Mary Baker Eddy's church manuals is Church Manual of the First Church of Christ Scientists in Boston, Massachusetts. In the first 9 editions of the manual, the title page also contained only Church Manual of the First Church of Christ Scientists in Boston, Massachusetts by Mary Baker Eddy. Beginning with the 10th manual, the title page read Manual of the Mother Church, the First Church of Christ Scientists in Boston, Massachusetts, and continued to so read through the remainder of the 88 manuals Mrs. Eddy published. The 89th manual, the only one sold in Christian Science reading rooms, is not Mrs. Eddy's. It was hastily, surreptitiously put out after Mrs. Eddy's passing, with a drastic change designed to give ecclesiasticism full control over Christian Scientists and Christian Science churches. To compound the fraud, the cover of this 89th manual boldly proclaimed authorized edition. Why did Mrs. Eddy in the 10th manual suddenly bring in the Mother Church, instead of leaving it simply Church Manual of the First Church of Christ Scientists in Boston, Massachusetts, as formerly? Because while she was with us, founding the Christian Science movement, many things in the manual did pertain to a mothering element. It remains Manual of the Mother Church, because the 29th manual estoppel clauses continue for all eternity to terminate all phases of a controlling mother element, to guard against all forms of ecclesiasticism and authoritarianism. The legal title of the Mother Church had always been the First Church of Christ Scientist. This alone has been its status since Mrs. Eddy's passing in 1910, at which time the manual estoppels terminated all aspects of a Mother Church, other than as a spiritual concept in the hearts of Christian Scientists. The First Church of Christ Scientist in Boston is legally established, as is also the Christian Science Publishing Society. It has no control over any other Christian Science church or any Christian Scientist, as is clearly set forth in the 13 Deeds of Trust, the 4th of which is reprinted in the church manual. To those who have given thought to the matter, it is becoming increasingly clear that if the manual were obeyed, all material aspects of a mother church would have ceased to exist at Mrs. Eddy's passing. The scientist has no fetish with a mother symbol, because as Science and Health states, science looks westward to the grand realization of the golden shore of love and the peaceful sea of harmony. One might say that for the scientist, the sun is rising in the west. Science, through Mrs. Eddy's writings, charts a westward course over the sea of harmony, which shows the student his haven is the calculus of love. It shows us all is latent within our consciousness. Therefore, the scientist has no need for an outside mother to mother him. The kingdom of God is within you, and it will surface as Mrs. Eddy's writings are understood. In the matter of the church, only as we put it, quote, back into the arms of love, will we not be found fighting against God. Built on the rock, the spiritual idea will live a perpetual type of the divine principle it reflects. It will speak to you of the mother and of your heart's offering to her through whom was revealed to you God's all power, all presence, and all science. All loyal Christian scientists hail with joy this proposed type of universal love. Not so, however, with error, which hates the bonds and methods of truth, and shudders at the freedom, might, and majesty of spirit, even the annihilating law of love. That's from Miscellaneous Writings. 1902 witnesses quantum leap in her plan. That she was preparing for the dissolution of the Mother Church can be seen by comparing titles of her messages for 1900, 1901, and 1902. The 1900 and 1901 messages were addressed to the Mother Church, but the 1902 message was to the First Church of Christ Scientist, or the Mother Church, Boston. As explained in the author's book, Mary Baker Eddy's Church Manual, 1902 was the year she began the process of adding a fifth director and accomplished a giant leap in her plan to prevent forever all centralized ecclesiastical control through bylaws making it impossible for the ecclesiastical five-member board or the material aspects of a Mother Church to continue. Eternity awaits our church manual, because our manual eternally guards against authoritarian ecclesiastical control over Christian scientists. The self-governing branches, or Christian Science societies, on the other hand, were not dissolved, but were to remain as long as needed. The Concord Branch Church represents the individual, self-governing Christian scientists, while the Extension, built in 1906, represents that same principle extending into the entire world. It symbolizes the extension of the truth of Christian Science out into the world. And it is this that Mrs. Eddy is speaking of when she asserts, its crowning ultimate rises to a mental monument, the understanding of Christian Science by the world, a superstructure high above the work of men's hands, even the outcome of their hearts, giving to the material a spiritual significance. Miscellany. The church Mrs. Eddy was interested in was the structure of truth and love, whatever rests upon and proceeds from divine principle. The church which the manual was to hold guard over to prevent its erosion and demise through ecclesiastical domination was that institution which affords proof of its utility. Webster defines institution as, quote, a textbook, something that serves to instruct as a textbook or system of rules or principles, unquote. For Christian scientists, church is our true being. It is truth wedded to love as one consciousness. It is that institution that rests upon divine principle and proves its utility. We are that institution proportionately as the message from God contained in Science and Health is spiritually assimilated. This message remains as our leader and guide to the goal of understanding our divinity, our God-being. Eternity awaits our church manual to forever prevent Christian Scientists from becoming prisoners of a material organization, in which Mrs. Eddy's partially understood message could be crystallized into a creed, and the principal concern of the organization becomes the sustaining of itself as an organization. An organization to sustain itself as an organization must suppress as heresy any departure from its man-made rules. Thus the outcome is the exact opposite of what Mrs. Eddy intended. As the saying goes, when love is gone, there's only justice. When justice is gone, there's only force. Mrs. Eddy quickly learned that material organization has its peril, and that organization is requisite only in the earliest periods in Christian history. Continued organization retards spiritual growth, retrospection and introspection. Mrs. Eddy wrote the manual to prevent for all eternity Christian Scientists becoming prisoners of an ecclesiastical hierarchy. Unity and the small group of wise thinkers. Let us not forget Mrs. Eddy's teaching that the only true unity is being alone with reality, with principle. She tells us the manual, with its estoppel clauses, was dictated by God. There can be no true unity, no true peace in the Christian Science movement until her manual is obeyed. She says she once thought that in unity was human strength, but she learned from experience that human strength is weakness. Real unity can only come from obedience to principle, to the divine authority of the writings of Mary Baker Eddy, which include the church manual, that for all eternity guards against authoritarian, ecclesiastical control of the Christian Scientist, who ideally is alone with his own being and with the reality of things. Forgetting those things which are behind, and reaching forth to those things which are before, we press toward the mark of rectifying 7 decades of wrong done Mary Baker Eddy, and toward the freeing of the Christian Science movement from the misrule initiated at her passing. A small group of wise thinkers is better than a wilderness of dullards, and stronger than the might of empires. Unity is spiritual cooperation, heart to heart, the bond of blessedness. Miscellany. Real progress has always come from the small group of wise thinkers. 2,000 years ago, progress came with Jesus and the small group who were obedient to his teaching. Again, in our age, great progress came with Mrs. Eddy and with those who faithfully followed her divinely inspired teaching. Today, those seeing the necessity of obedience to the manual's estoppel clauses are once more a small group of wise thinkers. Divinely, spiritually, our leader discerned that the great element of reform is not born of human wisdom. It draws not its life from human organizations. Rather, it is the crumbling away of material elements from reason, the translation of law back into its original language, mind, and the final unity between man and God. Spiritual progress, which is really the only progress, has always been pioneered by the dissenters. Those who dissent from the prevailing opinion are persecuted by the masses. So it is in Christian Science. The vast majority have not seen the wisdom of our leader's commands, and so wish to maintain the status quo, with an illegal board of directors in authoritarian ecclesiastical control. But anyone who has seen the light must separate himself from the crowd, and persistently press forward, even if he finds himself the lone dissenter. If he stands with Mary Baker Eddy's manual, with principle, eventually his stand will be vindicated, bringing progress in its wake. Appalling havoc wrought through disobedience. Mrs. Eddy ends her first edition of Science and Health with the statement, "Truth cannot be lost." Then she warns, "If truth is not admitted today in its fullness, the error that shuts it out will occasion such discord that future years will point it out and restore at length the fair proportions and radical claims of Christian Science."